Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the beloved Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, Jim, it was just earlier this week we talked about how North Carolina Democratic Senator Kay Hagan was staring at lofty 36% approval and 47% disapproval in North Carolina, and now we're finding additional reasons as to why. We've certainly documented several of those. She was one of the many Democrats who, of course, echoed the president's promise that if you liked your health care plan, you could keep it under Obamacare. Turns out she's still saying that. This is from WWAY-TV in North Carolina from earlier this week when Hagan officially filed her re-election papers. They said before the clip that we're going to play here that she had dodged their questions on Obamacare before, so they're clearly not enamored with her. And here's how it transpired this week.
Today we asked her again about the estimated 473,000 residents who faced cancellations when the Affordable Care Act launched, and again she did not answer directly.
If you had a plan and you like that plan, you can keep that plan in North Carolina, and I have sponsored legislation to make that permanent.
Hagan says in the 2 years before the ACA launch, insurers sold policies that would not meet minimum standards of the new law. Blue Cross Blue Shield said this week that's not true.
So Hagan is still lying, and Blue Cross immediately called her out on another one, Jim. Good week for Republicans, I guess, in North Carolina.
We appreciate the assist from Blue Cross Blue Shield. They're not doing this out of a, you know, proud effort or effort to help the conservative clients. They might be like, whoa, stop calling us demanding your old plan back because your senator said you could have it. She lied. That's the only thing we can explain. No, you can't. We never said we would. You have issued in a whole bunch of states. You have to get permission to the state insurance commissioner, and even then it's if does the insurance company want to issue it again. What we're seeing here, an interesting approach. There's some Democrats who have tried to just avoid the issue of Obamacare entirely. A lot of them go with this generic, well, I want to fix it, without really getting into too much detail of what they characterize as a fix. Periodically, President Obama and other Democrats will complain that Republicans are preventing them from fixing Obamacare, without really listing what those fixes are. But then you have this case in which you like just flat out deny it. Kind of like, you know, Harry Reid said, there are no horror stories from Obamacare. They're all lies. It's all being made up. I don't know whether it's, you know, audacious lying for political purposes and a bit of a mental breakdown and an inability to deal with reality and a retreat into a fantasy world. But I think that's what she does. I think it's what Harry Reid did. I think it's what a lot of these Democrats are doing in Obamacare, and they're just hoping that voters won't notice, but that maybe they can muddy the waters enough. The problem is that once you've gotten that cancellation notice, it's very real, and you can't spin it away, and we're seeing the Democrats stumble their way through this. So this will probably be popping up in an attack ad one more time, won't it, Greg?
Oh, at least one more.
Not that they don't have enough material on her so far, but, you know. Did anyone say this was the lie of the year or anything like that, Greg? Was there anything, you know, did anybody discuss this earlier? Maybe it escaped your attention.
Jim, on to martini number two now, and this goes back to immigration. At his weekly news conference yesterday, John Boehner was asked what he and the president agreed on most. Boehner and the president had a meeting this week. Immigration, Boehner said, we had a very healthy conversation on immigration. When asked to elaborate, Boehner gave a long pause and finally said, you asked a question, and I gave you the answer. So let's just review what's happened in the last month. They unveiled their principles for immigration reform. A week later, they said they're not going to move on immigration reform because they don't trust the president. And now they had a very substantive conversation, Jim. So if there's anything that we usually like in politicians, it's clarity and consistency in positions, and we're clearly not getting that here.
Yeah, I ordinarily would, you know, like you say, all right, have the speaker meet with the president. What's the worst that could happen? But maybe this is the worst that could happen, you know, that Boehner could say, all right, hey, you know, let's get amnesty through. I only need like 17 Republican votes, you know. Hastert rule, Schmastert rule. I got legacy to protect here. And there are a whole bunch of big corporations who love the idea of amnesty. So I'm cool with them. They're cool with me, you know. I'm kind of just kind of struck by the number of high-level Republican officials who go beyond thinking, you know, well, you know, there are a lot of people here who aren't necessarily security risks. They aren't drug smugglers. They aren't gang members. They're just living the American dream. So if we could figure out some path to citizenship, some sort of penalty they could pay, and you know, if they do the right things, you know, national service or something like that, we could, you know, find a place for them. And, like, you know, there's, you go from that to, even if you have that perspective, you have to know how much this divides the GOP. And you have to know that if the House, if they somehow managed to pass amnesty, it would make the fight way back in 2007 look like, I would say, a Tea Party, but that kind of a different context these days. It would be warm and fuzzy compared to the fight that would break out now. And so you've got this giant issue of Obamacare, which is sucking away Democratic support left and right, and, you know, brutal press, and it's got Gary Peters going after leukemia patients and stuff. Then all of a sudden, they just, let's bring this issue back that totally divides our party and put it front and center one more time. It's almost like a political death wish among some of these guys, because it's not just, you can even see, like, even Rubio, who was one of the Gang of Eight, stopped pushing this thing and kind of realized, look, the more I talk to the people, post-NSA stuff, post-IRS scandal, they just don't trust this administration to enforce the laws or to hold up its end of an agreement, so this deal is dead. So why Boehner wants to go further really escapes me, and it's ominous. And even if no deal comes out of this, this is one of the reasons that, you know, even though it can be a little overwrought and over-emotional and hyperbolic at times, the conservative base does have good reason to distrust Boehner, because sometimes he'll do and say things like this.
Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory seems to be one of the great fears here. Of all the things that Republicans in the House could do this year to dampen enthusiasm for the midterms, that would be right at the top of the list. So, all right, on to the crazy martini now, and this comes to us from CNN, but a lot of different outlets are reporting this. A California school that stopped students from wearing American flag T-shirts on Cinco de Mayo did not violate their constitutional rights, an appeals court ruled Thursday. The school's approach, according to the appeals court, and it's the Ninth Circuit, mind you, kept students safe in a climate of racial tension. The controversy and tension remained, a panel of judges from the Ninth Circuit said in their opinion, but the school's actions presciently avoided an altercation. The case dates back to May 5th, 2010, when the principal of Live Oak High School in Morgan Hill, California, asked a group of students wearing American flag T-shirts to turn their T-shirts inside out or take them off. The students refused, and that launched this whole court case, Jim. And so, as mentioned, there were clearly some racial tensions here. We don't know that the students with the American flags wore them with the best of patriotic intentions on that particular day. But the idea that you don't have the right to express yourself by wearing the American flag seems repulsive.
This week has taught us a lot, Greg. It has taught us the menaces of our time are charter schools, at least according to the mayor of New York City. Devoutly Christian bakers, according to all the people who are upset about Arizona's potential law. Obviously, leukemia patients in the eyes of Gary Peters. And, of course, these flag T-shirts. That is what terrifies us. That what needs to be clamped down upon. What's kind of fascinating is that that whole decision, the school's treatment of it, isn't the problem here the racial tension?
Yes.
Right? I mean, isn't part of the problem, you know, so let's say you're a Mexican-American and you're really proud of your Mexican hair. Hey, good for you. You know, Cinco de Mayo, hey, go celebrate it, guys. Have a good time. I'm not opposed to that. We in the Anglo culture have done a wonderful job of taking that noble foreign holiday and turning it into an excuse to drink. as we do with most foreign holidays, like St. Patrick's Day and things like that. So here we have this holiday, and you want to wear a T-shirt with a Mexican flag on it? Go right ahead. But the question is, why does an American flag seem some sort of like racially inflammatory or provocative statement in these contexts? If you're a Mexican-American student, why would you be upset by somebody, you know, now obviously when the Anglo students are wearing the American flag, and maybe Mexican-American students are wearing the Mexican flag, yeah, I can see why there's a problem. And I don't know, understand why you'd say, well, the American flag is incendiary. The American flag is the problem, but other people's flags. And then you turn into, well, maybe the rule is to have no flags. Now you're completely suppressing the freedom of expression. I've always subscribed to the idea that at school you don't have a freedom of expression. You're there to learn. You are, you know, the government is providing you a service, so you're not allowed to go out and do protests and do all that kind of stuff. Past court decisions had agreed with me. I guess I'm now an old fuddy-duddy. But they've you know, why this court decision? It's going to strike a chord, obviously. And look, yes, this is the Ninth Circuit, and they tend to be a little wacky about these things. But it's going to be seen as school districts banning the American flag. The next question is, so you ask the students to turn their shirts inside out. Greg, do you think they held the Pledge of Allegiance that day? It's a dramatic sea change in the experience of students, and I'm not surprised people are upset about it. And It is an appropriate crazy martini, Greg, because I can think of a few martinis that are crazier than this particular news item.
Yes, when the American flag becomes incendiary speech, we've all got huge problems. But as you very eloquently said, it's just the latest in a long line of absurdity this week. Jim?
Just to say, Greg, when you and I were younger, the term incendiary American flag usually meant the controversy over flag burning.
Yes!
A completely different kind of incendiary.
Yes, exactly. As I recall, we lost that one, too. Anyway, Jim, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
We'll see you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.